Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Ian Lewins. We're one of the consultants in the Children's Emergency Department in Derby. And I'm really happy to be joined today by Dr. Nick Schindler, who's a general paediatric registrar based in Norwich. Good evening, Nick. How are you?
Hi, and good evening. I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
Excellent. Yeah, not too bad. Very snotty at the moment. I think that's the joys of paediatrics this time of year. But thank you for joining us. And we're going to talk about something I saw you doing on Twitter. And I thought, I've no idea what that is, but it sounds interesting. And that's Barlint groups. So what on earth is a Barlint group?
Firstly, forgive me, I'm not quite sure if my pronunciation is correct or not. So I'm calling them Barlint groups. I've heard all sorts of people call them all sorts of different things. And I probably should confess at the start that I'm not an expert in Barlint groups at all. I'm not a clinical psychologist. And there is an official Barlint society if anyone wants to get sort of first-hand information about them. I'm just a paediatric registrar who seems to have stumbled upon them. And things have worked out quite well so far, so I'm going to keep going.
Okay, disclaimer there. Yeah, okay.
So essentially, a Barlint group is a form of, I suppose you could call it a group psychotherapy. It was developed in the 1950s by two psychologists based in London, specifically for use with GPs. If you're a purist about Barlint groups, then they are a forum for doctors to explore difficult doctor-patient interactions. That's the original form of them. They're by no means unique to me or paediatrics. They're very widely used in psychiatry training, and in fact, that's where I first came across them. Was as an F2 in psychiatry when I was working in Leeds. A psychiatry registrar was running groups for all the SHOs there, and that was my first experience of a Barlint group.
Okay, so what does it typically involve then?
So typically you have a group of doctors who are all of the same or a similar grade, and they get together in a sort of a safe and ideally bleep free space with a set amount of time. You have a leader for that group who has a degree of experience using the Barlint methodology, and essentially you have a doctor who brings a case. And that doctor starts the session by sharing the facts and only the facts of an experience that they have had. As I said, as if you're being a purist, then that experience is around a difficult patient interaction. Okay. And then the group have an opportunity to clarify the facts of that case. And then the doctor sits out. Following that, the rest of the group discuss how they think the doctor might have felt and why to do with that case.
Okay. I guess whereas a sort of, you know, our traditional morbidity and mortality focuses very much on the clinical aspects of things, this is, I guess, focusing on the emotional, psychological aspects.
Absolutely. And that was the great appeal of it for me, was that originally for me in terms of paediatrics came about through supporting a resilience day in the East of England, or a wellbeing day in the East of England. And I've got sort of major antibodies to that term and wanted to do something that was a bit more structured. And really, for me, it's about sort of having a formalized education tool that we can use to learn from those experiences that we find really quite unpleasant, but where our normal sort of clinical skills don't quite cut the mustard in terms of giving us a way of dealing with something.
Okay. And does it tend to, in your experience of the ones that you've run, does it tend to sort of focus on, you know, difficult encounters or things that didn't go well? Is it often the negative?
Mostly, yeah. There's a mantra that what happens in balance stays in balance, and I won't use any sort of specific examples, but I've run groups where we've been a bit more liberal about the interpretation of what a balance group is, and therefore we've talked about difficult interactions with colleagues, difficult interactions with parents. But generally speaking, doctors tend to bring things that they found hard to manage, and they want to pass out and share a discussion with other people about.
Yeah, I mean, what's the aim of the group then? Is it to sort of try and reassure the person who's brought the case, or what's the purpose, do you think?
I guess for me, that really depends on the doctor who brings the case, although they may not get exactly what they sort of come for. So once the doctor shares the facts of a case, they sort of take a back seat, drink a cup of tea and have a piece of cake, and listen to everyone else talk. And that seems to really allow everyone else to say things that they maybe wouldn't say if it was their experience in terms of interpreting a situation. And people seem to be much better at saying, do you know what, that would make me really angry, or I'd feel really guilty about that, or actually I'm quite afraid of parents when they shout at me and things like that, which I think we find very difficult to say about our own practice. But somehow it becomes easier when we're depersonalizing it and talking about someone else.
Yeah. So, is there an ideal group size, do you think, or does it tend to vary on who's simply available?
So for us in Norwich, trying to run regular groups, the size really varies upon who's available. I think ideally, if you've got really engaged people, then 4 to 6, but we've run some groups at RCPCH that probably made it up to about 20. And actually, people were very respectful of other people talking and quite switched on, and that worked fine. I don't think I'd want to do it loads, but it did work.
Okay. And I mean, I guess is there one sort of person who's maybe like yourself is a bit more experienced that tends to facilitate and keep it moving?
So we're trying to, with winter pressures aside, run groups at least once a month at Norwich, and it's just been me facilitating those at the moment. My colleague Laura Poutney, who started some groups with me regionally at the East of England training days, is on maternity leave, but she was a fantastic help in getting things set up. And then there are loads of people with balance experience around the place. I think the Wessex region run groups quite regularly at their paediatric training days. And I saw some colleagues Amy in Vienna present some paediatric balance groups from the West Midlands, where they had some clinical psychology support and backup to help them run the groups, and they felt that worked really well.
All right. And, how long do these sessions tend to last for? In my mind, is it about 20 minutes, 30 minutes, something like that?
Can do. So we try to set aside 45 minutes for them.
All right.
And sometimes you can get through two cases in that if things are going really well. If things are, something's particularly difficult to come up, or that people feel particularly passionate about, they can run a little bit longer. But we run them in a lunchtime teaching slot, which after people turn up and have grabbed a sandwich is normally about 45 minutes.
Yeah. And I get, once it's sort of people have discussed this, does the person who's brought the case kind of then come back in at the end, or what's the structure?
Yeah, so I tend to invite the person who brings the case is referred to as the doctor. I tend to invite the doctor back at the end to share anything that they want to, or sort of validate anything that's been raised, or maybe challenge anything that's been raised that they don't think was the case. Some people do choose to come back in and talk about it, and some people don't. It really depends on what they want to get from the situation.
One of the things that strikes me about this that I think is interesting is you sort of talked about it being doctors. Is there a reason it doesn't include, say, other healthcare professionals, nurses, HCAs, those sorts of people?
I think that's a really good question. So we have a fantastic group of advanced nurse practitioners at Norwich, and we invite them to join us, and some of them have, and some of them have chosen not to. I think that works really well, that for nurse practitioners, depending on where you work, have very variable roles. Our nurse practitioners don't work on the SHO rota. They have a parallel rota of their own, but they essentially fulfill the same role, and so balance seems to work really well for them. I think that from groups that I've run elsewhere, the more diverse a group is, the less controversial things people are able to share. If you have a select group of doctors who are all of the same grade, the dark thoughts come out of the woodwork a lot quicker, if that makes sense. I think people feel a lot safer around people of the same level of experience and role as them. And I have deliberately asked consultants, for example, at Norwich, not to come to our groups, because I think that the dynamic would change quite considerably.
Yes, it's interesting. I mean, do you think it's people would feel less able to talk then if there were sort of consultant colleagues or more senior colleagues?
Yeah, absolutely. I think as professionals, we're very geared towards assessment and thinking that we're constantly being judged. And we learn from a very early age what you can and can't say and how to sort of sanitize your thoughts. And balance for me is really about stripping that away and getting people to be as honest as possible. And so any sort of challenge to that dynamic means that people go back to what's safe. They go back to what they think they're expected to say and what they're meant to do. So keeping groups small and keeping them within a single profession tends to help people to share more. I think it would be great to see specific consultant groups run. It would be great to see our nurses pick up a group of their own. That would be fantastic. But again, I think it should stay within sort of little professional silos.
And I guess with you sort of saying what goes on here stays here, if you get some learning from it, do you share that, or is that kind of against the point of the group?
So I was always advised to start groups with a sort of core set of rules as to how a group is going to work, and much like with simulation, I've very much seen what happens here stays here, and I really encourage people not to take things outside of that. That includes reflections and written reflections. I think Balint is a fantastic space to maybe explore the more emotive side of critical incidents. But I'm really sort of explicit with doctors who come to do that, that they must absolutely not write down what people have said afterwards. But I'm very happy to sign a mini kex or a CBD for someone's portfolio to say this doctor took part in this group, in order to evidence their reflection if they want something like that for their portfolio. A fantastic colleague of mine called Alex Rowland, who is was until very recently an education fellow in the East of England, was doing some brilliant work with foundation trainees and reflection, and we put together a study to look at Balint-like groups for facilitated reflective practice. We got the foundation school in the East of England and the team at Cambridge and Addenbrookes to agree to allow some of their foundation trainees to be randomized to these groups instead of doing the traditional mandated portfolio reflections that you have to do in foundation. Unfortunately, we haven't found a PI with sufficient time to run the study. So if anyone's listening to this and they'd like to get involved in that and they've got some free time, that would be great, because neither of us have the hours to put in on a regular basis to do it. But it's all set up and ready to go. And really, I think that that process is fascinating as to whether you can use this to allow people to do all the things that we tell them not to do in written reflection.
Yeah. And I guess people listening to this might think, well, certainly my initial reaction looking at these was, well, what's the difference between these and the Schwartz rounds? I mean, the Schwartz rounds are something I think people are more and more familiar with and seem to be being introduced. What for you are the differences between the two?
So I guess the main difference is that a Schwartz round is a very big, open, multi-professional space. Someone will bring a case and will very much talk around it and their experience of it, and then invite replies. That's certainly my experience of Schwartz rounds. Ballant is very structured. And again, going back to the idea that you're within your own professional group, so it's much, much safer. I think, you know, the idea of Schwartz rounds is that they should be a very safe space to share those thoughts. But if your chief executive is sat in the corner of the room, there's probably things that you're not going to share, even if you really want to. And hopefully they won't be sat in the corner of the room for your Ballant group.
Yeah. So what was, you know, when you set this up locally, what was it that sort of appealed to you about it and made you think, actually, this is something I want to do and take forward?
There's a couple of things. One, I think that educationally, we've been, I say we as in junior doctors, but I guess all healthcare professionals, through a few high profile events, we've been really discouraged from sharing genuine emotion and feeling in reflection. And I don't think that's a great thing. But I can understand why it happens. And so I wanted to create a space where colleagues could share those experiences in a constructive way, rather than having a big vent. Part of it was a sort of weird, geeky rebellion against the idea of wellness and resilience, because I happen to think that we're fantastically resilient already, and that... whilst we might need ways of learning from these experiences and passing them out, it's not about going on a yoga retreat. So this was a structured alternative. And then it was also about trying to do something that was specifically for junior doctor colleagues, and showing people that they were valued and that they were respected as individuals, and a way of protecting time. And you know, the flu season aside, because it's been fairly difficult for all of us, I think, to make time for teaching in flu season, we've been really successful at Norwich in having bleep free protected time for these sessions, that I hope, particularly for the SHOs, really says, you know, your professional development here is respected and your time is important, and we're going to protect it.
Yeah, I mean, just going back to one of the things you mentioned there, what stops it becoming a big moaning session then? You know, I could see that it could very easily do that.
Hopefully good facilitation stops it becoming a big moaning session. I certainly, you know, some groups need more facilitation than others. I think in any group work is like that. And really trying to guide people sort of back on track, hopefully having a light touch in doing that, but pulling them back. And I guess as well, because of the format of Ballant groups, you're talking about your perception of someone else's experience. So it's, although people do share anecdote, and I think anecdote can be quite useful in illustrating a thought or a feeling, and sharing experiences of your own, generally speaking, because the people talking, it's not their case, they're not quite as emotionally invested, as it were, and they don't end up down that ranty rabbit hole.
Right. And again, you know, the cynic might say, this is just a big touchy-feely group hug, nonsense. I'm taking it that's not your experience.
Yeah, I don't know. Some things can be, sometimes it can be touchy-feely nonsense, and that's fine. I think that if you do this well, then it is structured and constructive, and it gives people a way to think differently about a situation, but also helps them to appreciate how other colleagues approach the same or similar situations. You know, we do that with communication skills. We do that with incident simulation. We do that with clinical skills, and really managing a difficult emotional situation is a clinical skill. It's, you know, just one that we haven't traditionally spent much time teaching.
Yeah. And so when you sort of decided I'm going to set this up, how did you go about it, and B, what sort of reaction did you get locally from your colleagues and peers?
Oh, great question. So when I first set this up in the east of England, Laura and I had been asked to run a workshop at a regional wellness day for the ST1-3s, and there were about 70-80 people coming. We left it to the last minute, and we were having a phone conversation and saying, what should we do? And I said, have you ever been part of a balance group? And she said, no. And I sent her the link to the Balance Society website and said, have a read, see what you think. Yeah. And then we had another phone call about an hour later, and she said, yeah, I think we could make this work. And so we ran parallel groups there, and we got really, interesting topics. We let people know in advance, and we just said, if you've got an experience that you'd like to share in this format, then bring it with you. We were a little bit disingenuous. We called them interactive clinical cases. So we sort of disguised the nature of it a little bit until people were actually there. But that worked really well. We then got invited to run some groups for the trainees committee and college staff at the Royal College of Paediatrics and Child Health. We went along and did that in London, and that was quite good fun. And I said, having recently started at Norwich in September, before I started, I had a discussion with one of the consultants, who said that they were happy to set aside time every month for me to have a regular group. And that's been working well so far.
Yeah. And you know, what's the sort of the feedback been from these? Has it been generally pretty positive?
So I think whenever you make an intervention that surrounds professionals, your immediate feedback is always positive. That's, you know, that's the stuff that people put in posters and take to conferences. And people are always quite complimentary. There are also people who will say, oh, this is just fluffy nonsense, or it's a waste of time. And that's a valid opinion too. I think for me, the most valuable thing has been colleagues who've come back afterwards and said either that they really needed to discuss that case and they just didn't know how, and it had given them a format to share an experience that they just hadn't been able to say to someone, I need to talk about this. But also colleagues who have said that they've then subsequently come across similar experiences that they had a better idea of what to expect and what to do in. And that for me is quite rewarding, to say that, you know, we've got colleagues who have been in a difficult situation with normally in pediatrics with a parent rather than the patient themselves. Yeah. And that they've had an extra few tools to deal with that either in the moment or afterwards because of some of the things that we've discussed in groups. And that's fantastic.
Yeah. So you mentioned then the RCPCH, and obviously you're involved in your role with them. Is this something that you think the college will encourage or take forward or explore further?
That's a really interesting question. So yeah, I'm the assessment examinations and START trainee rep for the college. They've been fantastic at humouring a number of initiatives that I've come up with over the last few years, and I'm incredibly grateful to the college and the college staff. I would like to see things like mini-kecs and CBD liberalised in the form so that it allows people to feel able to run groups like this and then evidence them through portfolio. I don't think we need more new forms in portfolio. I think less is more. But I would like the tools that are there to become deliberately more flexible so that people can do stuff like this locally. And then evidence and have that respected as evidence within their portfolio without having to, you know, write out their thoughts and feelings in a fashion that they might then fear end up in the wrong hands.
Yeah. So finally, Nick, then if people listening to this think, okay, this sounds quite interesting, but I need to know more, where would you direct them to get more information and advice about these?
I think so. If you want to do it properly and you want to be a grown up about it, you can absolutely go to the Balance Society. They run formal courses. They are the people who know what's going on. If you want to be a little bit more rogue than that, go and find your local friendly psychiatrist or some clinical psychologists, because most of them, in my experience, have come across this methodology and they're good to have a chat to. If you want to see it in the pediatric context, then if you Google any other word than resilience and my name, you will find our blog article that we wrote for RCPCH last year. We had a short article in the new Milestones magazine as an introduction to Ballant as well. And you can find, if you go searching for them, you can find lots of posters and short articles from different groups who've had varying experiences of Ballant, either in pediatrics or psychiatry or other specialties. And I think sometimes seeing what colleagues have done on the shop floor, on the ground, as it were, for me is the most useful, because it's easy to read someone's textbook version of something, but actually seeing how people have done it in practice for me is a lot more useful.
Yeah, absolutely. So plenty of resources there. And if people wanted to sort of touch base with you, is Twitter a good place to do that?
As you well know, Twitter is a fantastic space for that. At Dr. Nick Twitt, you're very welcome to get in touch on Twitter. It's been a fantastic space for collaboration, and is responsible for most of this nonsense, in fact. So I continue to thoroughly enjoy that.
Fantastic. Well, I feel inspired by that. I think that's really interesting and something I'm going to look into. So thank you so much for joining us today, Nick.
Fantastic. Thanks for having me, and I look forward to seeing your Ballant related exploits in the future.
Excellent. Thank you.